and welcome to Pod2Pod Podcast, where we explore the news, services, technologies, and advice that will help podcast producers and consumers. Thank you so much for joining us. I am your host, Matthew Passy. On the episode this week, we have Sophie Kneebone. She comes to us from Melbourne, Australia, and Omni Studios. Now, Omni Studios is another podcast hosting platform that offers some other interesting services and accessories is not the right, like different features for their podcast hosting that you see on some platforms, not others, but they have a pretty different, look at podcasting, and they just unrolled some new features that they're really, really proud of. So we were excited to chat with them and, sort of introduce you to another voice, another space in the service. Look, we love Libsyn, we love Blueberry, we love all the big players, but there's a lot of folks doing interesting thing in podcasting, so we just want to make sure that you get a chance to hear about all of them here on Pod2Pod. And so before we get to chatting with Sophie, just remember, check out pod2pod.com. It's your go-to resource for all things podcasting. There you can sign up for our weekly newsletter, check out the latest headlines, browse our directory of podcast services, surf our calendar of podcasting events, and so much more. It's all available at pod2pod.com. Now, here we go with Sophie Kneebone. This week on the Pod2Pod podcast, we are going all around the world, and we are chatting with the podcast manager for Omni Studio. They're based in Melbourne, Australia. Omni Studio is an on-demand audio publishing platform. They offer some incredible features for podcasters who are looking to host with them. In particular, they have network and large amount of show ability to manage all those shows with a single login. They do unlimited hosting, social media sharing. They have some ad solutions and mobile apps for your show. And they've also had a couple of pretty big announcements in the last few weeks of new features that they're offering to podcasters. So it is very exciting for us to talk to them. We are speaking with their podcast manager, Sophie Kneebone. Sophie, thanks for joining us here.
Thank you so much for having me, Matthew. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, it's our pleasure. So Omni is, I would say it's a relatively new name for a lot of podcasters, especially here in the States when it comes to podcast hosting solutions. So just tell us a little bit about what Omni Studio does that might be a little bit more unique and different from the traditional hosting companies that we're used to dealing with.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Omni, it's Omni with a Y, by the way. It's an important distinction to make for anyone that's listening and wanting to look us up. It's Omni with a Y. It started as a consumer platform, actually, about 4 to 5 years ago now, which was before my time. I've been around for about a year and a half. But it started as a consumer platform where the idea was personalized radio. So you'd be able to take little short snippets of your favorite audio content and mix them together with music and basically create your own radio station, your own personalized radio station. But what happened then was basically our founders realized that radio stations didn't have a way to get their content online really quickly at that time. You could have a feed going and things like that, but there was no way to kind of go from on air to online straight away. So that's how Omni Studio as a platform was born. So the idea is that radio stations can be broadcasting, and our software is automatically capturing that broadcast, just the spoken content, no music or ads, and putting it online straight away so that producers can be sitting there as the content is going to air and tweeting it as it goes and cutting it into short snippets and putting it out there and advertising the show. And obviously with that comes the archiving and searchable kind of system that we have. And then the natural progression from there was to go into podcasting as well, because basically what we do is end-to-end audio on demand management. So anyone that's doing any kind of audio on demand, we can help them manage it. So then I came on board as the podcast manager to help podcasters specifically to manage their shows. So we do, like you said, we basically do everything. We do hosting, archiving. We can help with monetization. We help with social sharing. We have really, really in-depth analytics as well. So it's ideal for podcasters.
So going to your in-depth analytics right now, I know it was maybe about 2, maybe 3 months ago by the time folks are hearing this that you had made some announcements about what your analytics can do, what your statistics were all about. What was the big announcement there?
So our really big announcement was basically a little bit of background before I go straight into that, is that we can track all the kind of downloads that that any other hosting platform can, right? So we can do downloads. We have a way of estimating subscribers. We can see where people are listening and on what platforms. But one thing that kind of gets gets lost and is really difficult to track is downloads that are coming through iTunes. Because once an episode is downloaded in iTunes, we don't have access to that information. And even when it's being listened to just straight through the platform, we don't have access to it. Until our incredibly amazingly talented developers have actually figured out a way to track a small percentage of listens that happen through iTunes, through the Apple platform, which is pretty huge, and it hasn't been done before. There's been no one else who's been able to do it, but we figured out a way to do it. So that's what we announced a few months ago.
So interesting, you said that you can sort of track people's listening through iTunes. So does that mean if somebody goes to the iTunes store, searches for a podcast, hits play, you can get a little bit more deeper dive into the analytics of the person who's hitting play versus what traditionally most of us do, which is download an episode and maybe listen to it a day or a week later?
Pretty much, yeah. So the kind of data that we can get goes beyond just the fact that a play happened. We can actually track the consumption of it. So, yeah, startup drop-off points and the amount actually listened to as well. And if people have skipped, that kind of thing, which we can already do for listens through our widgets and through our native mobile apps. But now we're going to add the iTunes capability to that as well.
All right. And, I mean, this is kind of stuff that some of the other hosting companies also have available, right?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of consumption data is available on some other platforms. To my knowledge, it's not as in-depth as what we have. I'd be happy to be corrected on that. But from what we've researched, we've got the most kind of detailed, granular kind of information that you can get. But, yeah, that, as far as I know, no one is doing that level of granular measurement on iTunes listens.
Okay. Now, you've also had another announcement very recently. You have released your own visualized audio posts for social sharing. You know, visualized audio posts is sort of becoming a very popular thing across the podcasting ecosphere. These are live action GIFs or videos or whatever you want to call them that sort of shows a moving wave and sort of helps people to attract them to the podcast. So how's the experiment with you guys and your visualized audio player going?
Really, really well. The reaction to it has been really positive, and just the people that have been using it have told us that they're getting amazing engagement from these videos, you know. And they look really nice. They look really good, and that's so important in a Facebook or a Twitter feed because when you're scrolling through, one of my favorite phrases when we're talking about this stuff is thumb-stopping content. You know, you want something that's going to make someone stop scrolling through with their thumb. So that's what this is. So the videos look really nice, and they the waveform moves based on the audio that's playing. You can add a really engaging picture to it. And make it look really, really good so that people stop and actually know what the audio is about before they even start listening. It's looking really good so far.
And why is it that the moving waveform, you think, actually captures people's attention? As you said, like, why is that a thumb-stopping thing? Why is that gets us to maybe pause and take a listen and you know, maybe then go deeper into an episode than other forms of social sharing that we've seen before?
I think there's a bit of FOMO that goes on, you know, fear of missing out that goes on with this kind of stuff. Like when you're scrolling through a feed and you see that something is going on that you can't, that you have to actively engage with. Once it's right there in front of you, there's something in us that wants to be involved, that wants to know what's going on, especially when you couple that with a really engaging picture and a really grabbing caption. You can be clever about it and really make it something that people want to stop and be involved in. And we know that platforms like Facebook prioritize their native videos as well. So uploading it as a native Facebook video means that it's just going to appear in more people's timelines than just about anything else.
It gives you a chance to tap into what's clearly becoming the most popular content on social media, which is moving pictures, video content, things like that.
Exactly. Are there
any other plans to advance the visualized audio player a little bit more, maybe include some text, a transcription, you know, because I know one of the challenges I think we face as podcasters is how many of us actually go through social media on mute and we don't actually listen to what's going on. And so it's great that this moves, but I still can't necessarily access that content yet.
Yeah, definitely. And a really interesting thing here is a point that was made to me by someone who I can't remember who made this point. So if that person happens to be listening and goes, that was me, please get in touch with me. But it's the difference between discovery and consumption. So we really see this visualized audio tool as a discovery tool, because I think that on social media, it's a discovery platform. People aren't going to stop and listen to a half-hour podcast when they're flicking through their Facebook feed. What they are going to listen to is a 30-second snippet that tells them what that show's about, and then they can go back. Once they discover it, then they can go, great, I'm going to subscribe to that and listen to it when I have time, you know, when I'm on my commute or when I'm doing my housework, whatever. So as a discovery tool, this visualized audio is really, really powerful, because, like you say, it grabs people's attention and it gives them a chance to screw all this content away for when they have time to properly consume it. So to go back to your question about if we're going to improve it, I would hope so, yes. So captions is something that we've been talking about a lot, and some of our developers are really well-versed and really experienced in speech-to-text technology, and they're working on different ways that can happen. That's definitely something we have an eye on, absolutely.
So going back, so when people are seeing, like you said, it's a discovery tool, when people are seeing the visualized audio, are they going and hitting play right away? Are they just going to subscribe? Are they simply bookmarking the post on Facebook and saying to themselves, oh, I want to make sure I go check that out later? Like, how quickly does the interaction between seeing the visualized audio and then becoming a subscriber, listener, downloader happen?
That would be a really interesting kind of in-depth study to do. I think what's happening is that people are interacting with the Facebook page that is posting it, and then going from there to that podcaster's website or their podcast feed and subscribing that way.
Lose track of that relationship once that happens.
Yeah, I think so. It's hard because we can't, if it's uploaded as a native Facebook video, we can't kind of get those stats in depth for us, but you can see how many views the video has had, obviously, but it's hard to see kind of how many of those are in engaged play or not. But you can kind of see where people are coming from when people go visiting the website, that kind of thing. So I guess that's really more something that the podcaster could track in terms of where people are landing on their website from. But it would be an interesting study to do for sure.
And I'm just curious. So when if I were to pass some visualized audio and I click on it, where does that click? What is the default place where that click would take me to?
It depends on how it's been uploaded. So if it's a native Facebook video, which is something that we have in our platform, you can generate these videos. They take a few minutes to render, and then you can upload them natively to Facebook. So it doesn't actually take you anywhere unless you have a link in your description, for example, which I would recommend doing for sure. When you click on the video, it just plays as a video. But we have another sharing option, which is what we call the Omni FM pages or an Omni show page, which is a URL that you can share on Facebook, and then that will take you to a dedicated Omni landing page that has the content on there. So you can do it that way if you wish.
Gotcha. Okay. And lastly, we are talking about podcast discovery, and that brings us to your most recent announcement, another big one that Omni has made. And this is all about the new podcast discovery feed. And you guys call it a revolutionary way for people to find and to vote on podcasts. So take us a little bit into, the podcast discovery feed and what was sort of the thinking behind this one.
Yeah, the discovery feed is very, very dear to my own heart, because it was actually, it was months ago, it was myself and our CTO, Andrew, we were sitting in a room, we had a meeting about something. We started chatting about podcast discovery and going, surely there's got to be, a better way for people to find podcasts. And we came up with this idea months ago, and now finally it's out there in the world and it's live. And so basically how the discovery feed works, what sets it apart from other discovery tools is that it works just like any other podcast feed. So it's basically at its very core an RSS feed that people can subscribe to and listen through iTunes or whatever their chosen podcast podcasting app is. But what makes it really different is that you subscribe to it, and then the content that you get delivered every week is unique to you. So when you first subscribe to it, you'll get a little intro clip that tells you how it works and how to interact with it. And then what happens is you get a 30 to 40 second promo for a show. And then from there you can decide whether to go on and listen to the full show itself or skip through to the next thing. And in each promo, you can vote that you can sort of say like or dislike on each thing. And that's it, say, that's basically saying, give me more like this or give me less like this. And so what that does is that kind of gathers that data on what you specifically want. And then each week when you get your new content, it'll be based on those preferences.
So it's almost like a Pandora effect of podcasting where you listen to some music and then you say what you like and the algorithm sort of tweaks the formula and says, oh, well, if you like that, and then, well, we think we're going to like this as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically like Spotify Discover Weekly for podcasts.
Okay. And what's been the response so far to the Discovery feature?
Really positive. People are really excited about it. It was hard to kind of explain exactly how it works before we released it. We were being a bit mysterious about it. But once it was out there and people could actually interact with it and play with it themselves, it made so much sense. And they're like, I can't believe no one else has done this before, you know. We've had so many submissions from podcasters to get their shows into the feed, and steadily climbing subscriptions as well. So more and more people are listening to it, which is really exciting.
So you don't necessarily have to be hosting with Omni Studio to be part of the feed.
No, it's completely platform agnostic. In fact, I would even go so far as to say this is almost quite separate to our hosting services. This is something that we, you know, it started as honestly a passion project. Like Andrew and I came in on a weekend to work on it and because it was something that we wanted to do for the kind of podcast community because it's something that's aimed at helping podcasters to find more listeners and helping listeners to find more content. Like that's what it's aimed at. So, yeah, you absolutely don't need to be hosting on Omni Studio. That doesn't affect whether or not you get in the feed. There is a certain level of curation in terms of quality control, but I haven't rejected any shows so far. Anyone can get on the feed. They just need to send us an email.
I mean, now I'm intrigued. What would it take for you to reject a show?
if it was something, bad audio quality, if it was really, really low quality audio, then I'd probably say, look, nah, you need to up your game a little bit because I can't hear the show properly. Or if it was super offensive, racist, homophobic, whatever content, then obviously I'm not going to let that in. But we want a really broad spread of different shows and different takes on different things. Obviously, as diverse as the iTunes stories, that's how diverse we want the feed to be. So it would take quite a lot for me to reject something.
Okay, good to know. So anything else that folks should keep in mind as far as what Omni Studio might have on store for the future or what they might need to know if they're thinking about making a switch? I mean, obviously, you know, you're based out there in Melbourne but I imagine you still have a lot of podcasters from, you know, a pretty global audience, right?
Yeah, we definitely do. We take our kind of support services really seriously. So, like I was saying to you, I think before we started recording, I spent a lot of time scheduling calls between Melbourne and the US. We've got people all over. People need to keep an eye on what we're releasing. Like the iTunes consumption stuff, we haven't actually rolled out to customers yet, but that will be coming soon. So that's something to stay tuned for, because that'll be really exciting when that comes out. And the Discovery feed as well, the more people who are listening to it, the better it is for everyone. And like I said, anyone can jump on our website and submit a podcast to us. So, yeah, if people are keen, then they should definitely get in touch.
Excellent. We've been talking with Sophie Kneebone. She's podcast manager for Omni Studio. And once again, just a reminder, Omni is O-M-N-Y, omnistudio.com. Take a look over there. They might have the hosting and podcast platform that is right for you. So, Sophie, I want to thank you so much for being able to coordinate our massively different time zones and giving us a few minutes here on Pod to Pod today.
Thank you so much for having me, Matthew. I really enjoyed chatting to you.